irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and we have our special guest, of course, that we try to have every week, but we also have a co-host because my middle brother, Terrell, who I usually introduce at this time, isn't with us today. So we have my cousin Prince with us. Say hey, Prince.
How you guys doing?
Sexy voice. And of course, we have the eldest brother, not necessarily the wisest, but the eldest.
Todd. Yeah, everyone's Jackson. Laughing because they know it's not true.
And that other laugh you hear is another family member of ours, our beloved cousin and mental health advocate. I think everyone who follows us knows this. But she's an amazing, intelligent person, and that is Miss Yashi Brown.
Hi. Yeah.
How are you?
Hello.
And I do poetry. I'm a poet, too.
And you're a poet.
Mental health. Awesome. Yes.
Okay, so we're here live on the Power of Love Radio on the radio show. So if you are listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. And later on in our show, we will be opening up. You're cool with that, right? Opening up some phone calls, maybe?
Yash? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's a fun stuff.
Yeah, we'll be opening up some phone calls. But for now, you know, you can always get to us on Twitter. Taj Jackson, are you ready with some social media handles?
Yes. Go ahead. Twitter is at DDJ Foundation. Facebook is DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. Instagram is at DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. And the website is www.ddjf.org.
All right. And then, you know, something we don't talk about, but real quick, the Power of Love song, it's the intro to our radio show. And if you want to help the D.D. Jackson Foundation, one way to do that is simply by purchasing the Power of Love song, which is the song you heard on the intro. It is by my brothers and I, and I'm not plugging it for that reason. I'm plugging it. I'm plugging it because all the proceeds from the song goes back to D.D. Jackson Foundation, and it goes to support things like this radio show and the multiple stuff we do, such as the Boys and Girls Club, and we actually have some cool things coming up for 2017. So that's one simple way to help us out. Okay, so I think it's time to start talking on topic, and our topic today is similar topic as we always have, of course, dealing with loss and grief. But since we have Yashi here, who is a great mental health advocate, is going to have a little bit more mental health information for today.
For sure.
So Yashi, on the way here, we were talking about mental health, and you told me a fact that I didn't know, and that is one out of every five people have a mental health condition.
That's right.
I had no idea. That's quite a bit. And before we get into that, I guess there's a couple of things. There's so much I could talk to you about, but I'll start with this. You recently received a SAMHSA. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's it.
A special award. What does SAMHSA stand for?
Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration. And yes, it took me some time to nail that.
You did well. You did well.
But yeah, what SAMHSA does is it focuses on behavioral health, substance abuse pretty much for the nation. And it's something that the agency tries to make sure that it's really targeting whatever seems to be some of the major challenges in the present and what's happening. For instance, right now, opioid abuse is a major one. And then how family is so important in the recovery process and being able to have the right support tools. So the family needs to be a support for the person who has the mental health challenge, but also the family needs to be supported in mm-hmm. order to provide those tools and resources. So in focusing again on the family, now you're kind of opening it up and creating that dialogue that maybe, again, that one person is just going to stay in isolation, stay in silence.
Yeah.
But now when you're now incorporating the importance of bringing in family and all of that, then now we have discussion, conversation. You know, it's on the brain. And in my situation, I think the reason why working with SAMHSA has been such a great experience is because they saw how my mother and my sister were such a support and my family. Mm. But my mom, she...
Auntie Reby?
Yeah, she didn't... I'll tell you what, she could have freaked out.
Yeah.
When she saw me in my serious psychosis, when I was going through serious psychosis, and when I had different episodes, I had more than one episode. But she was calm, and she was just took the diligent steps. And it wasn't that she wasn't emotional. She was still very caring and very much so there for me. But when someone is going out of control, that one person that's calm, once you come down off of that, you remember that one person that's calm. And that's and she just seems so in control. And then everyone kind of was able to, learn along the way. And it wasn't a straight line. It wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. Because when you don't know anything about this world, I mean, you don't talk about depression. You've never had anybody that had a reason to talk about it. All of a sudden, you're like, wow, all these symptoms and what's going on with Yashi, there's actually a name for it.
Mm.
You know, this is actually something that actually is normally treated for. Now we're thrown into this world where we got to find out what's going on. So we kind of slept our way through it.
Yeah.
But along with doing that, my mom had this really calm presence and ability that said, we're still in control, we're going to handle this. And so that gave me the confidence to really believe I can get better.
So that's great. And that strength is what allowed you to get better.
Totally. That family support. It took my own personal determination, and you know how we are. I mean, we don't take no for it. Determined. Like, no, I'm not going to let this thing beat me. But I went through times where I thought I was going to give up, and suicide was totally on the brain.
Wow.
And so, because no one can live in that kind of pain when you're going through bipolar depression or depression from some of these serious mental illnesses, it's that bad. Nobody can live through that kind of emotional pain. And it is clinical. So bipolar has a spectrum. I was on the end of the spectrum. I was very close to schizoaffective spectrum or that area. So I had major episodes in that way. But anyways, you know me, I will talk.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Wait. Can you describe mental health just for people that aren't, familiar with it?
One, thanks for that question. So if you can imagine...
Sorry to interrupt. Just before you do start on that, for everybody listening, does... substance abuse count as a mental health?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what I love that you've just brought up, because a lot of people don't believe that substance, they used to treat it as a totally separate thing, but now no. Substance abuse, mental, it's all in the what you would call mental illnesses, like clinical depression and what we're talking about, bipolar. That was considered mental illness. No, substance abuse, addiction, that's all mental illness, and they treat them together now. Mm. And I'm so happy for that, because people with bipolar, most of them self-medicate. A lot of them self-medicate with alcohol or drugs or both. So that's a combined, what you would call dual diagnosis situation. So
as a family member or a good friend of someone that you feel may be struggling with that, what's the best way to approach that, or what would you recommend they do?
That's the difficult part. Yeah. I know.
I think I might have something to say about that. Because,
Asha,
you were talking about how your mom was very calm, cool, and collected. And I remember...
Yeah, which is not easy.
TJ, when your mom died, you said that Jermaine was the one that had been calm.
Well, he gave me the most important hug I ever experienced.
Both of you will always remember that. But.
And it was a cool, calm, it's going to be okay type of hug that was huge.
And in my situation, when my dad died, it was grandma.
Yep.
Oh,
because she wasn't crying at the hospital. She was focused on us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was supportive of us.
Yeah, that's a good
very
point.
Very much so.
So
you remember that sticks in your head. Once you come out of that point, you want to go to that. It's like
I think you want some stability,
right,
or some symbol. Everything's going to be okay.
Everything, like, I need to feel you right now to know that
that's
everything's going to fit.
That's a good point, Prince. Mm-hmm. So in the instance where you think someone may be struggling or may be suffering, is there a proper way to approach that person to maybe see a doctor for a diagnosis? Or
I think, we're writing a poem on Hookus.com.
Okay.
It addresses this.
Hookus? How do you spell that?
Hookist.
Okay.
It's a group poem, and it's crowdsourced, so we have people submitting from all over the world, like from New Zealand and Manitoba and Russia, submitting these lines for this beautiful piece, and the theme is reach out and touch somebody. So if you observe someone who's experiencing emotional pain, how would you go about reaching out or expressing wanting to reach out?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're someone experiencing emotional pain, how would you describe that because you don't know how to open up?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting to see how you do this. And like a landslide majority of the expressions and the lines that were coming out in the poetry was, I'm going through this pain. This is what I'm experiencing. And there weren't very many from the other angle.
Right.
It was very smart. It was like, I actually had to go, I'm like, okay, guys, now let's focus in on this other angle. And I could tell it was like, and some of the things that came out of it is actually what I'll say right now. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to kind of talk to you necessarily and be in your business. I'm just here because I care. And if you want, I'll stay. If you don't, like, that was one of the lyrics.
Okay.
And that is kind of the idea. We're not experts. I don't have a doctorate.
Yeah.
I'm a sister. So you go in and you just be a sister.
Yeah.
Hey, you go in and you be a mom.
Yeah.
That is what you're an expert at. You're an expert at that. Well, some of us.
Yeah. No, but
but for those people, you know, you don't. That's the thing. You just let. I think the biggest thing is just calmness and letting someone know you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, and then maybe just checking in. I'm there, but it's the way you do that. If you come at somebody like, "Have you been taking your meds?" Okay. Don't do that necessarily like that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that, but you might want to bring it up at some point and say, have you been feeling, I've noticed a change in your personality. I've noticed a change. Let's talk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But these are going to be areas where you're going to have to hopefully develop some trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that trust is what allows you to be able to approach the person, and it's definitely delicate. Another one of the lyrics that came through for the poem was, take my calloused hand. I know what you've been, I've won my own fight, and I can help you if you want. Like, it was such a, I'm totally butchering the line right now.
Okay.
But what I loved about it was like, he didn't just say in his line, take my hand. He said, take my calloused hand.
Yeah.
That's empathy right there. That's actually poetry too. That's when you add that part in. So, you know, I've been there too. I'm empathetic. I'm here. You'd be surprised. Those kinds of things are ways. Now, getting to the theme of the poem, Reach Out and Touch, it's really kind of based on changedirection.org, Barbara Van Dalen, who's become such a good friend and source of inspiration. She's a clinical psychologist and founder of an organization called Give an Hour, givenhour.org. And what she did is started this cause, this amazing cause, to change the culture of mental health. And it's based on, what are the 5 signs of emotional pain? So if you're that person that is noticing things, or maybe you are just like, why is so-and-so saying that? Well, there's actually 5 signs of emotional pain that are very consistent. And it's on her website. I can list them right now.
Okay, yeah, please.
I hope I don't butcher this. Agitation, withdrawn, personality change, hopelessness, and poor self-care. And I can honestly tell you, before I was diagnosed with bipolar, I had all 5 of those. All 5 of those. My dad would come in my room and... this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I'm saying this.
He'd
be like, I smell something, right? Like, literally, I wasn't showering.
Mm.
I wasn't putting on I was letting my face, hair, everything go. I was staying locked up in my room. I was like, I had every last 5 of those signs. So when I saw the campaign and what she was doing, I'd resonated so strongly with it. And I was like, I got to work with her. And it just ended up being a natural, situation. So this campaign I'm doing on Hookus.com, Again, that's H-O-O-K-I-S-T. It's bringing attention to these five signs based on reaching out and touching somebody. So not only, again, noticing the five signs, but then paying attention to yourself. Maybe there's something wrong for me. And the other reason why this is really awesome is because the earlier you catch illnesses like bipolar or even schizophrenia, or these are major serious mental illnesses, the earlier you catch them, the easier it is to treat, the better it is to treat, and the what you're able to do is the possibility of recovery is so much stronger the earlier you catch it.
It's time sensitive.
So it's, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Wait.
I want to get back to your question, though, Taj. You asked what is mental health or how would you describe it, because that's so important. I can honestly say, because that, gosh, it would involve anything that impacts your day-to-day functioning. So, maintaining good mental health is being able to just maintain a livelihood, be able to go to work, be there for your kids, you know, be able to handle your general responsibilities, just being able to take care of your day-to-day functioning, you know, going to school and all of that. But when that stops, when you're locking yourself up in your room, or when you're forgetting, whenever something's happening that's now impeding in your day-to-day functioning, then something's going on mental health-wise, possibly, or emotionally-wise. So I would, again, I am so not a doctor, but I would say that's the main thing, because that's what happened to me. That's what pretty much they say in most of your materials.
Did you recognize that, though? Like, do people that have mental health, do they recognize, are they the first?
Or not at all. I had no idea.
That's what I figured.
I was told that's always a good idea. Sign of mental health is you never know it yourself.
So you don't know it yourself. I just thought
I was feeling. I thought that was just the way I was supposed, that was the way I felt. And I recognized that I felt different than other people, but I just started feeling this sadness that was so deep and hopeless.
Yash, how old were you? Because you mentioned, first, how old were you when around that time? Late teens?
19, 20. Okay, 19, 20 years old.
You mentioned something that it usually surfaces at around college years.
That's right.
Right? Explain that.
So, yeah, when you're dealing with some of your, again, your more serious mental illnesses that, like bipolar and, again, schizophrenia, or some of even your other illnesses, if you're predisposed to them, usually around college age, between the ages of 20 and 26 is when literally your majority of diagnosis, individuals that are diagnosed with any of those illnesses. I was officially diagnosed with bipolar at 24.
Okay.
But I started having symptoms before then. I just didn't know there was a name.
Now, why at that age? What were you saying? Was it? I think you mentioned it was the stress.
And for me, I wasn't in school at the time, but I was going through heavy stress my own, just personal stress. Again, that I didn't know was so intense, but looking back, ooh, it was very intense. I don't go through that kind of stress now. Like, so I was going through that, finding yourself, being in that your early 20s. I was dealing with also a love interest situation. I was just, there were so many different things happening at that time that I was in my own stress. But for the average young person, it's college, actually. Actually being in college, if you're predisposed, a lot of them, it just happens around that time. And again, you're finding yourself, you're in those 20s, but then college can be somewhat
stressful,
intense.
Well. Yeah.
But I think it's also important that, because you said that there's usually these symptoms of when you have mental illness or something like that. But it's also, we don't want people to think that if they are feeling sad on a certain day that they might have a mental illness. It's that, I mean, there are peaks and valleys within the human experience, and you are going to have some bad days, you are going to have some good days. Now, if you do have a mental illness, you definitely will need some help.
And correct me if I'm wrong, is that where something like changedirection.org with the five signs?
Right. So those five signs are usually exhibited together.
Can we say them again?
All those five signs. And then the other thing, because again, these are really strong points, you're absolutely right. The human condition, you actually want to have a full range of emotions.
Yep.
You
yeah.
want to experience. When I got medicated, when I went on my medication for bipolar, I couldn't even cry because yeah. what that those medications do is it flattens everything. So I didn't feel any excitement mm-hmm. or just happiness or motivation, and then I wasn't even able to shed tears. It totally makes you flat. You want the full range of emotions that the human experience gives you, but when it starts to affect your day-to-day functioning, like is what I was talking to Taj about, mm-hmm. and when you start exhibiting all those signs, now you know there's something you need to look into.
At once. Because I feel like once. Sometimes yeah. I exhibit those signs where I don't leave my apartment. You know?
You mean sometimes you don't shower, friends?
Oh, yes. No, weekends? those are my weekends. They're like, okay. Some weekends, if I'm not
poor
texting, don't come
yeah.
to see me.
Yeah, this is all at once, but also something you've been noticing over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And it's like...
Not just like that.
No, yeah, no. Personality change is mm-hmm. one of them, too. So if someone's... I mean, when you think of personality change, that's not necessarily in 1-2 days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a personality change, meaning over the course mm-hmm. of a few months, six mm-hmm. months, you'll notice, wow, this personality has okay. changed.
So again, the FromChangeDirection.org, the five signs
uh-huh.
is personality change, agitated, mm-hmm. Withdrawal, mm-hmm. poor self-care, mm-hmm. and hopelessness.
Yes.
Cool. Yes. I want to talk about that last one, hopelessness. Now, the person might feel hopeless, and you were saying that a lot of these mental issues are about time and when you get to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to encourage anybody giving up hope, but is there a certain time where you can't help somebody because it's too late? Is there a benchmark where it is too late?
Well, when it comes to suicide, that's completely something that can be. That's completely. What's the way that they say that? We have the ability to get to an individual that is facing suicide. We have the ability.
So it's never hopeless.
So it's never. It's just. We don't talk about mental health. We don't talk about mm-hmm. opening. We don't talk about our emotions. We don't talk about any of these things. Mm-hmm. So these individuals are living in silence because of culture. Mm-hmm. That's what's so important about changing the culture of mental health. If the culture changed, just like what happens when we have a broken leg, you know?
Yeah.
If you have a broken leg, you have a million people, not a million, but you have folks coming up. Let me get that door for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to need someone to drive you to work for the next week. I'll chip in. That's a culture. That's something. Yeah. So imagine if we had those kinds of things because we were aware more in a social level of mental health.
You're right on, because I think it's an understanding.
It's an understanding.
Yeah,
and I think that there's not mm-hmm. an understanding of mental health
because
and the
it's
conditions.
In the mind. Yeah.
And it's something that we talk about with dealing with loss and grief of a passing of a loved one. It's so, like, in a way, it's maybe a strong word, but it's kind of taboo to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of just don't know how to approach it, so you don't approach it. And,
right.
and a lot of people don't get the help they need to deal with it because it was never really addressed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And then there's the stigma around medication, which I take medicines
yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
I take medicine every day because I live a lifestyle of wellness, and I do, gosh, I do a lot of affirmations. I meditate, but I try to eat as well as I can.
Yeah.
But I, as you know, TJ, I run long distance.
Yeah.
That's so that I can take the smallest dosage of medicine in order
necessary,
to, okay. yeah, necessary, because I do have to manage the severe, peaks and valleys, and, you know, you have to manage stress so you don't go into that altered state of, you know, mania and all those things. So I definitely take my everyday meds, but versus when I first, when you first come out of the hospital or when I was first diagnosed, it's like completely different. I mm-hmm. have a management and a maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from getting to know your body. That's just from going through this, and you really, you know your body to the point where you don't push it. You learn what are the parameters so that you can maintain and you can still function.
Okay. And a couple of facts. I'm a facts kind of guy. But
mm-hmm.
90% of people who die by suicide have a mental disorder.
You see that?
90% of people who die by suicide have a mental disorder.
Yeah.
So it's something that's very important.
If we know about,
we could help a lot of people. And then here's another fact that I'll say right now. 30% of those who are homeless have a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
30% of those who are homeless have a mental illness.
You guys were talking about bringing this to within the social eye
and
helping people understand it. I think that's the way that it needs to be, is understanding. But in my personal belief, I don't ever believe that you can understand fully like your mom died, my dad died, but you can't understand
my
what I went
died.
Through. Yeah, sorry.
Just gotta be part of the pack.
But you can't understand what I went through, and I can't understand what you went through. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think when you said it, Yasha, you said empathy. You didn't say sympathy.
Yeah.
And now I'm not sure if I'm correct about the words, but I'm pretty sure sympathy is being in the same situation and having mm-hmm. sympathy for the person, whereas empathy is not being in the same situation but understanding their pain mm. and trying to help.
Yeah, I think
unless
so.
Unless it's flipped. I know it's
one. I know. I get those, you know, I just stay away from sympathy. Only because I don't feel. What I know is empathy, it's taking the time to try to feel what that person is feeling, or you've been there and you can also, you can empathize because you've also been, so you naturally just feel what they're feeling because of that. But then there are some people who try to empathize, who try to really understand and feel where another person is coming from versus, oh, I'm so sorry that happened, mm-hmm. which I think is sympathy. And like I said, I kind of stay away.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because
I
understand.
But for people like, for me, for example, mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily how, if somebody comes up to me with their problems, mm-hmm. I'm there to listen to them and I'm there to talk and I might even give them advice.
Yeah.
And I can try to empathize with them as much as I
as
can, but I will
can.
Never tell them that I understand what you're going through.
And
because
you know,
I feel like if someone told me that, even if their dad died and they told me the same thing, I would tell them you don't understand.
Yeah.
Because you really can't.
Right, right. And you know what, Prince? I always am the one who says, you know what, I can't imagine what it must be like to be in your shoes. Mm. This is what has happened to me, but I know that I can't imagine, but I'm here. I know sometimes we just need someone who isn't going to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Who
you
isn't
just want
gonna
to
judge.
Talk to them.
Just let's talk as people. Let's just talk and, you know, let's have a conversation maybe about it. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I'm a big believer in saying, you know, I can't imagine. I don't really understand. But we all, you know.
We're here to support you.
We're here to support. Yeah. And if you want to talk about this.
And I think that's also
I'm here
important
to listen.
Because some people will feel guilty if they have tried to help and they were not, maybe they lost someone or they weren't able to help. But it really shouldn't, they should know that it's not your fault.
Yeah.
If you were there and you tried to support them, you did.
The best you could.
Yeah, you did the best you could, and that's what counts.
And so many times, I know of a few situations where, again, maybe bipolar or some of these, again, clinical depression runs in family, but it's triggered by a death.
Mm-hmm.
It's triggered by what we're talking about, grief. And then this situation that you just grieve, and it continues to, you know, crescendo.
Do you know if there is a trend going one way or the other in terms of mental health? Is that 20% number going down or going up? Do you know?
What I can tell you is suicide's going up. Opioid abuse is going up.
Now, opioid...
I mean, and it's not just that it's going up. Like, within a certain time frame, it, like, has shot up. So it's...
Wow.
These are things you want to pay attention to,
why do you think, Josh? Why do you think that's jumping up?
I read an article
Let's hear
on
you.
This, actually.
I want to hear you, Prince.
I found a very interesting article, and it's actually social media.
Yeah.
Is what it's about.
Really?
And social media has actually been the root of a lot of today's issues because social media, you can get bombarded with so much information all at once that it's very overwhelming mm-hmm. to see it, so you don't get the full story of everything. That's for a lot of other political and other stuff issues. But for this issue, I think the problem is that it's a social media is a medium in which people can target less strong or other victims, or I don't know what you call them, people like for bullying, for example.
Cyberbullying.
And they can target them anonymously. They don't have to confront them in person. It can be someone who doesn't feel good about themselves and they're like, I'm going to get on here and do this and this.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the suicide rate has increased, because I read the article that it has led to the increased suicide between 13 and 19
ages.
Year old.
Well, I think it's increasing the stress
because
a lot of kids don't know how to deal with it and cope with it, and it's very hard to deal with. But I think another thing is social media has led to a society that's not as connected to human relations as they were 30, 40 years ago. I think we're getting a little bit more callous as a society. Stealing that word, but we're not. I just don't think that love and connection is as strong as it should be. And
it's
I think
everybody's on their phones all the time.
Yeah,
look at anybody when they're sitting down; they're always texting.
Yeah,
that's one.
It's
of my
just so
pet
convenient.
Peeves. If I'm having
it
a
is,
conversation, someone's looking down, texting, and they're like,
I don't even like having
uh-huh.
conversations on the phone. I would prefer to have them face to face and actually learn about the person and learn about their history.
See, I'm impressed. I love that. How old is Prince? You're like 20, right? Are you 20
yet? I'm
about
to be.
Okay, I'm aging you. But I'm telling you, I am that, like, if you were meeting up and if we want to say something quick, or you know, but I want to talk. Like, I'm, as you can see, I'm a talk. I want to talk. I want to, like, soak it up, and I want to be there in person and get to know you. I am very much so connect. Mm-hmm. And I think it might be for the same reason. I think it's you probably value your relationships, your real relationships. It's not about surface relationships. It's about real people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's about real connections. And I think just some of us in certain situations, that's a really important thing, maybe. No matter what our background is, but for some of us, I think that's, for me, just knowing this is a real connection. This is a real, like, because those people are the ones I want to make sure I'm around.
So let's try to do a little bit better job connecting people.
Yeah.
I got some Twitter stuff. Sympathy is feeling compassion, sorrow, and pity for the hardships that another person encounters, while empathy is putting yourself in their shoes.
Okay, so we're pretty close.
Have another.
Putting yourself in their shoes and trying to feel where they're at.
Yeah, with empathy. And then also, there's a question about how do you deal with a family that doesn't take your mental illness seriously?
That's an unfortunate situation. I mean,
it's so common.
It is.
It's so common. Okay, so pretty much what this tweet is, this individual is saying, is they don't have a family support system.
They don't have a family support system.
And real quick,
that doesn't mean they could be loved. It's just there's a misunderstanding. Because I'm sure there's people that love you that
the family themselves might not be strong enough to support themselves, because they might have their own problems.
True.
Yeah.
A lot of times when you get, this is what happens a lot of times, when you get into the situation of supporting, or you come in from the outside, you're like, oh, this is generational. This is going on in more than one family. It's just now this is the one to come up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's exposed maybe. But getting back to what we were saying about this, it sounds like the support for the illness and the support for this, realizing this person needs recovery, isn't maybe really there. Mm-hmm. Now, depending on the situation, this could be, if it's a situation that is completely unsupportive in a negative environment, there are organizations, there's resources out there that will take them in. When I say take them in, meaning that they'll be able to talk to and get some advice from. And then peer support. I love it.
Yeah.
Now we can go to Project Return Peer Support Network, which is a foundation that I'm on the board for. And what it is peers helping peers. And so these are, the whole organization is ran by peers, and it's for peers. So like, I think 80% of our board, we have a diagnosed mental health challenge. And then awesome. Most of the employees, everyone does. So it's a living proof, living breathing proof that you can recover to the point, you know. Recovery, by the way, is a process. It's not necessarily a destination. It's an everyday thing. But the whole essence of it is peers that are able to have that empathy and have that compassion as well, and be able to embrace them as, you know, a family. But then provide resources and provide tools, because if you're not getting that support, and if your family, if you don't have that, you need a support system to get through these illnesses. You need some sort of cheering squad, you know,
My advice for that person would be to think outside the box. And I think telling the family member, and if they're not believing it or not listening, may not be working. So I think maybe printing out an article and giving them the article. I think doing it in a very different way can be impactful, or even really giving them the podcast, this radio show or podcast, just to get flip their mind so that they know it's a serious thing that you're trying to relay.
And it's a great thing that you bring up writing, because people have said that writing can be very therapeutical. And I know, Yasha, you enjoy writing for that very reason.
For sure.
But I've been called a man's man a lot of times before because one of the main things I believe in is...
By who?
Just you know, people here and there.
I haven't heard that one. That's who that person is.
Man's man.
But
I can see that.
But one of the things is I believe in a strong self-support. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand in these situations that you do need an external support. Mm-hmm. But my question to you is, do you think that if you had a strong support from your family or for whoever it is, can you make that change if you don't have the drive and the determination to do that?
I want to make sure I'm understanding. Say it one more time.
Yeah, let me phrase it. To get through it or to, what would you say? Recovery, what was the term you used?
Yeah. It's a process? Recovery is not a...
It's not about the destination.
Yeah, it's a recovery. It's a process, not a destination. Yes. But I don't even think I say this all the time. But it's not a destination, is the idea. But it's an everyday thing.
My question is who's? I don't. My personal belief, and I could be wrong, is that I don't believe that the family or your support system, whoever it is, can start that recovery for you.
Do you think it has to come from within?
It needs to come from within. You need to. I don't know if recognize is the right
That's
word.
It's hard
to
though.
I know. But well, because we have, there have been mm-hmm. situations where people have been, there has been a strong family support, there has been strong friend support, there has been strong support from everywhere, but they did not recognize it as support.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is a great thing as well, is there's two sides to this. A lot of times when you're ill, you don't know you're ill.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone to point it out to you and to say, and usually it takes more than one time or whatever, and it's when they're starting to see things around them crumble, you know, that they want to. But again, this is about being patient. And so the family also has to know that this is a process. Mm-hmm. This is not an overnight thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't, for instance, these meds, when you're coming out of the hospital, and I needed them to bring me out of a very altered state. I had serious delusions. I was thinking things. So I needed this to bring me back to, okay, today is Tuesday and it's 12 o'clock. So, but you cannot live on those medicines every single mm-hmm. day.
You don't want it to be a crutch.
And you don't, no. That's kind of another conversation because if it's an illness, sometimes you have to.
That.
Yeah, you just, mm-hmm. exactly. Or everybody's situation's a little different than that. But back to what I was saying about this, you have to be able to find that balance with, if you're someone who is taking meds, the right kind, the right doctor who works with you, where there's an open conversation and relationship and you're being honest about it, because you're going to go through that period of going off and on, because I went on and off. Just, I was that patient. Mm-hmm. I was that person who, family might have been like, what's she doing now? But it's because if I had given someone like you what I was taking, you would have been like, oh God, I understand now. It's what we were saying. Like, you don't even, if I gave you, you know, I always say that. I see this in speaking engagements. I'll go, you know, when that person says, have you been taking your meds? No, I haven't. And you want to take my meds so you can understand why I haven't been taking my meds. No, but if you're on the wrong ones, it is not, you and can't live like that. So that one area is a process.
Mm-hmm.
What I have to just say is it takes patience and it takes understanding that everyone, it's not a straight line. Now, I had a burning desire to not feel powerless. That is what helped me. I had personal determination. And that is, in the end, what allowed me to be here today. But that personal determination had support. So if I had family members that were making fun of me, I would have started doubting myself, because my self-esteem had to build up.
But without that self-determination.
Right. So I had to have a combination of support along with that determination, mm-hmm. because my instinct is to, I'm not going to let this beat me. But there were days... I like to say, did I have motivation? Not necessarily, because when you're deeply depressed, that feels unachievable. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I had a burning desire still inside to not feel powerless.
And that's the important
part. I think the vast, vast majority of people have people that love them on their side. I just think a lot of people that feel they don't have support have people that are supporting them that don't understand mm-hmm. what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, how would you advise a 20-year-old who's screaming out for help to get their parents or their, you know, whoever it is that's taking care of them, their support for their condition? What would you advise for that person?
Let me think about this for a sec.
You know? Because that's hard.
It is, because you're already at a weak spot.
You're already in a weak position, and you may not have that fire. But obviously, you can't give up. That's my advice. You can't give up. And that's why I feel like doing something abnormal, not dangerous, not anything, you know, crazy, but getting their attention in different ways is the way to go, if you've tried.
For me, because my situation escalated, I was showing signs, but my situation, I go back to my situation because I'm trying to, you know, find my way through this, through answering this. It got so extreme that you couldn't ignore it, know. And when my sister came in the room and said, "We think there's a place that will make you feel better,"
that's
we think
awesome.
She did it in a way where I thought I was going to a retreat. No, I'm
kidding. yeah.
But she did it in a very kind way. Cool. Now, if a person doesn't know how to, or they've tried to open up to their family, and you've done what you can, you got to go. You have to find someone you trust. And hopefully there's someone that you can talk to that you trust and say, "I'm not well, I need help." And I really truly feel we all have at least one person in our life that we feel like we can say that to. That's what you need to do. Figure out someone you trust, go to them, tell them what's going on, and then, excuse me, try to get a game plan together. Try to get an action plan. This person needs to realize, and I'm talking to you individuals out there that are listening to this, you need to find that person you trust, open up a little bit, but just to the point where you're comfortable, but to the point also where they know this is something to take seriously, and then you need a plan. And that might not be something you know what to do, but now you know, okay, there's resources, there's other people that have been there. So there's information out there. And this is the beauty of the internet, because again, I didn't have, the internet has a lot of great information on it, and there's a lot of great information. This site we're talking about as well, Change Direction, but other sites that go more into the detail of getting the right support. I like NAMI also too, because NAMI does family to family. They have family support, and that's the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.
Is that NAMI?
Yeah, NAMI. So what they do is
it might be a .org.
.org, and it focuses on how families. Providing the family. They have a family-to-family program. Again, we want to remember, family isn't brother, sister, mother, father necessarily. It is partner in our life. It's a best friend. It's an adoptive family. It's, you know, whatever. I have adoptive family. So in family, we want to open up that word.
And I think of family probably very similar to the way you do, but not as way as a lot of people do, because people like to say, you know, the blood of the... What is it? Blood is thicker than water.
Yeah.
But the actual quote was taken from, and I like to tell people this a lot, it actually goes, "The blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb." And it actually means the exact opposite of how people interpret it. Because it's the blood of your bond is much stronger than the water of your family. So, and that's where the real family comes from, is in there. But you were mentioning about looking for someone, finding that one person or these people in your life that you can support. And I know that I don't want to talk about our religion or any of the religions that we're in, but we are all religious people. We believe in a
spiritual,
higher power,
for
spiritual,
sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what, if it does at all, how does it help deal with this type of stuff? Because I feel that if you have this, and as I've been growing up, I'm learning the reason why, you know, TJ has talked to me about the reason and the importance of religion in your life, because it provides that stability, that security. How does that play into what we're talking about?
First of all, I just want to say I love you for that question. I love all you guys, but I love you right now for that question, because that is the foundation. That is what got me through. Prayer, certain books, and I will sit up here and start crying right now over this, because it truly is that important, Prince. It truly is that important. Spirituality, and whatever it is that I like to say, because some people don't call them, some people feel, you know, they don't even know if there's a God. But, and in respect to that, whatever helps you feel connected to this universe. Mm-hmm. That could be writing, that could be spending time with your children, your dog, but also it could be prayer, spirituality, whatever, you know, you were raised, again, your connection to God and all of that. Whatever gives you that faith, that's the starting point. That is what I have. That's a every single day, some throughout the day thing for me, because that's also, if you think about what faith does, it's surrender.
Yeah.
We have to understand this is not only on our shoulders, you know, and in the moment that we surrender, there's a physical, therapeutic, medical reaction mm-hmm. happening in our bodies when we yeah. surrender. And so our faith and whatever we call our spirituality is the process of doing that in those moments. So the whole thing just makes sense. But for me, meditation has been so important, calming the brain, especially when you have mental challenges. You're thinking a lot. You're... Mm-hmm. to the point where your thoughts overwhelm your head.
You meditate, Josh?
Every single day.
As much, I've always wanted to. I can't. I haven't started that chapter, but I will, because I know
there's a lot of different forms. But
I think that's what's important. Is I think people see meditation as isolating yourself and being quiet.
Really?
Yeah. But just like there's different religion, there's different ways to meditate.
Yeah.
To find your peace and tranquility.
And again, it might not be for some. Running, a lot of folks when they run, they go into that that trance-like state where you're in the moment. It's about being in that moment and thought, you know, being able to clear the head.
That used to be me a couple
of
years ago.
Now I can't even working run. In art. I used to love
and building things.
Building, working with my hands is one of the. It's very therapeutic.
I actually have to paint shelves in at my place, and Prince is asking me if he can come help. He enjoys it that much.
Love
and
I'm
that is, well. You also so like fun. To make you jewelry, right?
Yeah.
You also like to.
I love working with my hands.
You like working with your hands. It's therapeutic. Well, you know, this gets into the poetry aspect. Mm-hmm. Poetry is what. That was the only place I liked myself in my head when I was going through these moments. Like I would write. And I would go into a state, and these thoughts would come, and I liked what I was writing, and then others were like, that's pretty good. So it gave me confidence. So I felt like when I was writing, I was doing something that was important, and it gave me that confidence, and then it gave me the ability to just shed all my feelings, and my poetry became that outlet. And I think that's the part that's beautiful out of this that comes, you're able to, with working with your hands and with all of these things that are helping you, which is your emotional well-being. Because all of this is not just about, you know, mental health and all that. Emotional well-being, mental well-being, wellness, all of this is really where it's at. And poetry allowed me and still allows me to get that feeling of, I just got that out. And there's a piece of art to show for it.
Yeah, you got something that lives forever. Okay, I have two questions real quick because we are running out of time. Number one, the poem thing you're doing, it's on Hookist?
Yes, H-O-O-K-I-S-T. Go to hookist.com. We're doing a groups crowdsource poem. It's beautiful. You guys are collaborating with each other. We've got some amazing winners that have already... So, yeah, just come. And you know what it is? It's just get your emotion. You get 5 free credits, which is 5 different submissions.
Okay.
And I think the main thing is to read what others, being inspired by others and knowing you're not alone and what they're going through, and then creating this beautiful piece of art out of something that's painful.
So do you have your own... Is it easy? Do I just go to hookist.com and I'm there?
To Hookist. Well, that's the best thing. From there, you can go to the link where the poem, and you can see all the submissions and where you're supposed to submit. You're going to sign in and create a small account. It's just a little account. You put your picture in. And then from there,
contribute.
You just contribute to what's happening. And it's a really cool thing that we're doing. And then on there, you'll see some of the work I'm doing. I have my audio book. So if you want anything, yashibrown.com, go to my website. You can pre-order my book of poems, Black Daisy and a White Limousine. I redid it for the audio book, so there's less poetry, but I took from some of my favorite ones. And then the audio book is going to be available next week.
Awesome.
So I'm excited about that. What else? I plugged No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no. You think, Taj, is there anything else on Twitter?
There's a quick question in terms of what if, and I'm trying to get the exact thing, but it was someone, she said, my dad has a mental problem but doesn't want help and doesn't accept that he has a mental problem.
Yeah.
How can I help him?
Oh, gosh. Again, this is the hallmark of what we're talking about, and I just want to throw this out. Why do you think he's not accepting it? Probably has something to do with cultural stigma. Mm-hmm. Probably has a lot to do with it. So this is why starting this conversation, the cultural stigma, then someone can be more in tune. So that'll help her. And then as far as how can she, just letting... She has to take care of herself and make sure she's staying in a healthy place. And then while doing that, maybe give articles, information, mm-hmm. like what TJ was saying, and mm-hmm. just being a daughter and helping where you think. And then, and just checking in, just continuing to check in, and letting him know that she's there.
Okay, we have a special caller. I have to answer this one. Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What's your name?
My name is Jimmy.
You don't sound like Jimmy.
Todd, you
what's
know
up, you guys?
Yeah. What's
that? I know we're short on time. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. You have about 30 seconds, Terrell.
Yeah.
What did you want
to... That's all I need. I just wanted to say to you guys, I'm sorry I didn't make it today. Yashi, I was looking forward to actually being there today, but I couldn't make it. Thank you for sharing, Yashi, your story.
You're welcome.
We love you. We're proud of you. We're here for you. And I think it's great that you came onto the show and dropped some knowledge for everybody, including me.
That's right.
Cool.
Okay, so I love this you. Is family. I love you too. I love all you guys. But thank you so much, Terrell.
That was very sweet, Terrell.
Just expressing your support. Right, you guys have always been there. All of you, everyone. Grandma was the major person who was part of that initial situation, and she just had her literally when I went up to the front door, and she just had her arms out. Literally, she opened
that's
the
grandma
opened the front door and just had her arms out, both of them.
That's grandma. We always talk about how grandma's impacted all of our lives. So,
yeah.
But Yash, I want to thank you, Terrell. That was awesome.
This was so much fun.
It is.
Right? I loved it.
Are we still on the air? Because
we're still on the air.
Okay, they're about to pull the plug.
Yeah, before we pull the plug, there's something I do want to say. As the Jackson family, and as my father is known for it, we're helping out our community charity, the D.D. Jackson Foundation. They work with the Boys and Girls Club. I've recently started with a friend of mine, John Mudo, Heal Los Angeles. It's a student organization on Loyola Marymount. Mm-hmm. We are still raising money all the way up until, I believe, December 5th. And we need money to host this Christmas event for the Boys and Girls Club of Los Angeles in San Pedro. If you'd like to donate, the GoFundMe link is connected to my Instagram, which is at Prince Jackson. Mm-hmm. It is also on at Heal Los Angeles. And anything you can give to us will be greatly appreciated.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yash, did you want to add? That's great, Prince.
Uh-huh.
Was there anything else you want to add real quick? Or?
Yeah, you could. I think we talked a lot about the thing. Just, again, changedirection.org. Go there, learn about the cause, and see how you can get your community involved in this. And hopefully your state. Bring them on board. We all have a shared vision. So this is about bringing all forces together. And then Project Return Peer Support Network, prpsn.org. We are peer support. So peers helping peers in Los Angeles. We're the largest peer support foundation in Los Angeles area, and I'm on the board, so there you go.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, thank you guys so much. Yash, thanks for being our guest, and Prince, thanks for co-hosting with us.
Yes.
That's pretty much it for us this week. We're here Wednesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on Pacific Standard Time. And if you found our program helpful and can afford to do so, please go to DDJF and support the foundation. Any donation amount helps us support those in need.
Can I throw one more thing
Yes,
out?
Please, quick.
Also, and I forgot to mention, a group of people that I work with all the time, Painted Brain. Mm. They are amazing. Go to Painted Brain. And this is located, again, in the L.A. downtown area. These are artists. They have art. They have web, all sorts of workshops where people with mental challenges or not so even that come together. And these are some amazing artists, graphic, everybody. But they just support being able to heal through art. So go to Painted Brain.
Painted Brain.
The Painted Brain.
Awesome.
All right. That's it. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.